The buses have, well, you ask me first.
Well, no, you got started on it.
The buses have association, which, whatever they do with association, they have lawyers and they have, you know what association is. And they do whatever they tell them, they report to them and so on. So when those that were blackmailed, this association knew about it, that the name of the people are blackmailed. When you came for a job, they asked you where you worked and what you were doing it, and they told you, they let you know, come tomorrow. So when I came tomorrow, the next day, to them, they told me that they wouldn't hire me because I was on a strike. I said, I'm not on a strike now. They even once called up my aunt to find out whether I am working or not. So my aunt said that I left this morning for a job, and I came in over there. So once they hired me, and they hired me, but I really didn't want to work at that time. It was a shop that they were striking. So I wanted to know who was working and who was not working. So I found there a lot of skips working. So I worked the half hour.
Did you get the job there to find out who the scabs were?
They gave me a job. They gave me a job. But because I told them, they wanted to know whether I was striking. I said, yes, they knew it on the record, they had, that I was striking. But I want to work now, I'm not working. So they got me the job, they gave me that job. And I came in there, and I knew that they were striking over there. But I wanted to see who was working, how many people were working.
That's why you took the job?
I took the job, yeah. And I went up there, and I saw all the people, and I knew them by the name, and I came down and came to the union, and I told them who was working over there. Otherwise, they wouldn't have known who was working over there. So then they didn't want to give me a job anymore, the association.
Did they fire you once you did that?
No, they didn't fire me. They didn't want to hire me anymore. I was blackmailed. They didn't want to hire me anymore.
No, what about this one job you got, though? That you wanted to see who was working.
Well, I worked a half hour or an hour, and I went down. I went down for lunch, and I didn't come back anymore. They called my aunt to find out whether I needed work or where I was. So my aunt told them that So that's how we knew that how many people were working over there in the shop. The union knew.
Why would they want to know that? Would they want to get in contact with those people?
Oh, yeah, of course. When we knew how many people, let's say if there's this, people go down on a strike. Well, they don't know, the union didn't know. Now it's more organized. They didn't know how many people work in the shop. And if they're not working, they should be on the picket line or they report to the union. But at that time, they wasn't organized, so they didn't know how many people are working in the shop. So I came to the union and I told them how many people are working in the shop and what they're doing. The most of the people were on strike, and they were just sitting around and playing around, and that's about all.
How did you like find out who these people were? Would you go up and ask them their name or?
No, I heard name and Mary, Jack, this and that, and that's what I heard. Some of them I knew, and some of them I didn't know it. But I told them, just I counted them, how many people they have, and I reported it to the union. That they have, they're not doing any work, but they're just sitting around. That's all.
Were they not doing any work because the others were on strike and they couldn't?
That's right. You know, where a lot of people are out on strike, a dozen people can do the work, because this is section work. Everybody does something else. One feeds the other. I showed you the picture.
Mm-hmm.
One person feeds the other. I make sleeves, you make a lining, and this one makes a sight, and this one makes so-and-so. That's the way it's separated in a shop. So then I couldn't get no job anymore. I was blackmailed. After that...
Why Would you have stayed with that job?
No, I would never stay there. I wanted to see. Somebody was talking about, we have to go up and see how many people. So I took it up and I went up there and saw how many people were. I didn't want to say anything and I went up myself. So then when I was out of work, I walked down myself. I didn't want to stay there. I would never stay in Skip. So after that, I couldn't get the job again. I couldn't get anything. They didn't take my word anymore.
Do you remember any specific places that you went and what happened, what they told you when you went in and applied for a job?
We have no work for you. We have no work for you. That wherever I went, they told me to come the next day. And they inquired with the name to the association of the bosses association. And they told them that I was in a strike and so on, and I'm blackmailed. I can't get no job. So I came to the union. I needed work very bad. And they decided, those that were at that time, Frank Rosenblum and Sam Levine and many others, that they should send those few active girls that were blackmailed. I wasn't the only one. There were a lot of blackmailed.
That was a pretty common practice?
Oh, yeah, it is. And it's right, they blackmail you, yeah. They send us to, that's how Harchevnitz got so big. They opened more factories, and they had, they were the only union shops, and they were, they had the people working for them, so it was nice to work for them. So, Rose Bender, her name wasn't Bender at that time. She married a fellow also that she met in the strike. And so did Irene met a fellow from the strike too, and she married him. They were sent to Harchevnitz, and I was sent to 21st and Halsted, to Shop 5, to Spitzer. 19. Yeah, 19 and Halsted, 21st and Halsted. It was one big block there.
Lottie, how did you feel during this whole time when you were, you know, applying and they told you no because of the strike? Did you ever have, like, any regrets about going on strike because it made it difficult to get a job? Was it, you know, did you think it was too much trouble? Or how did you feel when
you were? No, I didn't feel any regret. I wanted to work in a union shop. That's all I wanted, is to work in a union shop. And I was glad that although we lost the strike at that time, but I was still glad that at least one shop recognizes the union. Although it wasn't 100% union shop at that time yet, either, the Harchevnitz. But more than less, it was organized. They had a chairman, and the chairman had something to say, and they had a grievance board. They had, it was nice to work there. Although in 1915 there wasn't 100% union shop yet. In 1918 there, but they didn't have to strike too long, and they came in, settled, and then they went east. Then they went east from Chicago. Hillman went east to New York, and they organized there, which there, Chicago had a very big membership at one time. They had about 35,000-50,000 members in Chicago. They had a lot of factories. Now we haven't got factories. And in New York was the main industry was Rochester and Philadelphia. Was the main industry in New York. So after they organized here, see, in 15 we lost. And there was only Harchevnitz and Max. And then in 1718, they got it again out on strike. There was Cooper Hyman and Lambs, and it was Conor Rissman, and it was Harchevnitz, and many, many others which I can't think of it. They all organized. And then Hillman went to New York to organize. And he organized there. And there were a couple of hundreds of thousands of people there.
Lottie, when you, when this strike was going on back in 17 and 18, you were at heart.
Oh, I was out.
You were out.
I was out. I was married that time, and in 18, I had a baby.
Did you, during this whole time, did you go on the picket line with the strikers at all?
No, no. I quit in the late 18.
Could you describe the layout of the Hart, Schaffner & Marks shop? How did that differ from, like, Scott Tool & Mills and C.B. Shane?
Well, the shops were laid out almost the same. You want to know about the layout of the shops? We had the paint shop separate, the coat shop separate, the wrist shop separate. But the machines were lines of machines, and everybody worked separate, you know. And some work were taken to this machine, some work was this. And we always had the people carrying around work, or you had to pick up your own work all the time. I knew from where to go and get the work, and somebody picked up for me the work, and so on. That's the way it was going on. It was piecework. But it was nice to work in Hart-Scheffner's.
What made it nice?
Well, even at that time, it wasn't 100%, but it was still good. First of all, we had, the steward. Steward was a very nice person. It was Spitzer. Was a very nice person, an outstanding man. And downstairs was the where the finishing off. The cups, the pressing, the brushing, the basting was downstairs. I was downstairs. And upstairs from us, they had the paint shop, all the operators. They would operate the seams and make pockets upstairs. And Spitzer was all over. But he had an assistant upstairs, by Morris Sheps, Morris Sheps. He was upstairs. The chairman had downstairs an assistant too, and whatever it was, any complaint, the chairman was on the place right away, and it was very nice to work, very easy to work, and I made more money than I made before. At that time, I made $10, $8, and that was a lot of money to me.
Were there any of your friends from the other shops that wound up at Hart-Scheffner's with you?
Friends? Did I meet friends? Oh yeah, I had friends all over.
Were any of your friends from the other shops put into Hart-Scheffner's with you?
No, those friends were not in those shops. Because we were divided, we were sent away in different places.
How was that decided, do you know?
Well, this was decided in the union, because we were three girls together fighting all the time. They went to coat shops. Rose Bender did felling the size of the coats on a felling machine, and she was felling the sleeves inside. I did the bottom felling. Irene, I think she was on campus. Hand stitching or machine stitching, I really don't know what she did. But I know she worked by campus, I know she worked. Irene. So you see, we couldn't go in one shop. They worked by coats and I worked by pants.
Did you keep in contact with them once that you were sent to these different shops?
Well, at that time, yes, I knew Irene, yeah, we were friends for a long, long time. Even when we were married, we used to go. I used to go to Rose Bender. I used to go. Irene always was. She never made a living much, and she had two children, and she had a lot of trouble from her sisters. She had two sisters with her, and she had a sick brother with her, and she had two children. So with Irene, I really lost contact with her. Until I came back to work with Irene. But with Rose Bender, I was friends till the last day she died.
What about other people in the shop at Hart-Scheffner? Did you?
I was friends with some girls. In fact, One of the girl married the man that he was going to school. He was studying pharmacy, and she was studying pharmacy herself. And we were friends, going to each other. In fact, she has a son, a doctor. What's her name? What was her name? It'll come to me. I forget things, a lot of things I forget. I could remember from years ago. I'll think of her name. We were friends. I went to school with her, even in the later years, the YMCA, I went with her to school. In a literature class, I was with her. In psychology class, I was with her. And I used to go with her to Ravinia Park. She used to drive a car. I used to go with her to Ravinia Park. She died just a few years ago.
Did you have any good men friends in the shop?
No, I was much interested because I was I liked Spitzer, and I liked another fellow I liked there. He was a student, a medical student, Snyder, yeah. And then he died later. He married a girl from the shop, too. I looked up to him, and I looked up to Spitzer, but Spitzer was a married man, so I couldn't think of Spitzer. And
Did you get together with some of the women from the shop to do things like after work and...
Sometimes, yeah.
Did you ever do that with the men in the shop?
I had friends other... No, I didn't. We went to meetings together.
Uh-huh.
We went to meetings together. We used to discuss in the shop together. But I never kept company with the tailors. I never kept
Why
company.
Why was that?
I told you in the last time. By us at home... we thought that tailors and shoemakers were the lowest trade by us, and somehow I didn't want to go with tailors.
You kind of felt the same way, or you just always remembered that?
I remember that always saying it. I remembered always saying that, and. I had a lot of fellas, nice fellas all the time. And I kept the company, I kept with two sisters that they were, worked with me, Scotch Wool Mills, they worked with me. One was Dora and one was Sophie, that I was with the Ida, I was friends with Ida that you have written about her, with Ida too. I was, but you know, when you're married, you can't always keep on going. But we used to invite each other to the homes, and we used to go to countries together for the summer vacation. We used to go together. There, where I met my first husband, by Dora in the house that I worked with her. I worked with her together.
Were there any language barriers at all at Hart Schaffner? Did you have any trouble communicating with any of the people there? Were a lot of them immigrants? Or?
No. I knew Polish. At that time, Polish. We had German people, Polish people. Italian I could never grasp. But Polish and German and English, I always spoke with everybody. I never had Irish. In fact, I used to write letters for some of Polish girls. You know, in Europe, not everybody went to school. And I went to school, and I knew Polish, and I knew German, I knew Russian. So we had Polish women that left their husbands and children in Europe, in Poland, and they couldn't write, so I used to write letters for them to their husbands and to their children.
Lottie, did you leave Hart Schaffner and Marx in order to, when you got married?
Well, yes, I did. I worked there after I was married here. My husband was a conscientious objector, and when I married him, he was supposed to go. I married him September the 29th in 1917, and he was supposed to go in October to the war, to the army. And as being a conscientious objector, he had written letters to the president. Wilson was the president at that time. And they took up the matter of conscientious objectors that they didn't know what to do with them in the beginning, because they were, at that time there were a lot of them. So they took up that they are taken to the army, because the country objectors, they refused killing. They didn't want to kill. They didn't want to go to the war to kill. They'll do anything, but not to kill. So my husband, I don't know whether I told you, his father had a fur shop in on the Volga. They lived on the Volga. They lived in Astrakhan. In Russia, I want you to know, that Jews were not allowed to live all over. Jews were not allowed to live all over, and Jews were not allowed to go to school either, to higher education. Lower, first grade, up to four grades, yeah. But higher, if they wanted to go to high school, they couldn't go. But my husband's father was a manufacturer. They had a shop, and they were working at that time. They didn't wear the mink on the top. The mink was inside, and cloth was on the top. The cloth was on the top, and the mink was inside, or the Persian lamb was inside, and cloth was outside. And so my husband was allowed to go to school. He was allowed to go to gymnasium. Gymnasium was there, like college here. Higher than high school. It was like 2 years college. When you graduate the gymnasium, it was like 2 years college here in Chicago, in this country. So he went to school, and he had another brother. And after school, they used to work for their father in the shop. Mm-hmm. So when he came to this country, and he was one of the victims too, he didn't want to serve. It was a pogrom. There's two pogroms were all over Russia, if you heard of it. And they couldn't live here. They could, in fact, their mother, my husband's mother, and another child lived in a different city, not there, because they didn't allow them to have the whole family. So when he was 21 years old, he had to go to the army, and he didn't want to serve the army. So he and a cousin of his ran away from Russia. And when you run away from the army, the parents have to pay $300 to the government for running away. So first he was accepted to the army, and then he ran away. So the parents didn't have to pay the $300. So he came with his cousin to New York. And we have an organization in this country. It's called the Hayas. The Hayas is placing now too. The Hayas at that time placed immigrants. At that time people didn't run to America. They were running only because from pogroms, or they couldn't live in Russia. They were running away from Russia. And in the late 80s, in 1885, 1886 was a big run of Jews to America from pogroms, from the Tsar. And my husband came in 1911, and he landed in New York, and the Hayas, that organization, met him at the boat in Ellis Island, and they have homes. They also had homes for those people that they didn't have any family, nowhere to come to. They took them in their home, and they gave them food and shelter, and they found jobs for them. So the first job of theirs was in Mount Sinai Hospital in the laundry. So they worked over there for about a year, not even a year. And his cousin had an aunt in Chicago. So he wrote a letter that he wants to come to Chicago. So the aunt had two daughters and a son. And those, to my husband and his cousin, came to this year aunt. And they remained there. They only had four rooms. But they, you know, when you want to place people, you find place where to place them. And they all lived in the four rooms together. So one of the girls had married, the cousin, and the cousin also was a student in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to go back to school, but they had no means. So the cousins married that cousin of his, the girl, and she was a dressmaker. So she worked, and she had a few hundred dollars, and she went to Valparaiso with her husband to continue the study. Then my husband remained a few months in Chicago, working as a foyer somewhere, and he saved up a few hundred dollars, and he went to Valparaiso. And he, for his room and board, he was washing dishes, my husband. And he only had $400 saved up. And he had the $400 he kept. He needed for something or so. And that he washed dishes, so he got his room and board. And he did a little work sewing for this one for the students, and he made a couple of pennies every now and then. So my husband stayed there not quite 4 years. And he came to Chicago. When he came to Chicago, and his cousin graduated in Chicago. His cousin graduated as a pharmacist. And my husband just got an education because he couldn't graduate. He wanted a business course, but he had no money. So he came to Chicago, and he got a job in Marsha Fields for $18 a job. What he was doing, I never knew what he was doing, but I thought it was Marsha Fields. Marsha Fields has a store. Everybody's a salesman over there. That's what I was thought they were. So he was a floorman, he was a tailor, he was everything, doing everything, just to make a living. He was making $18 a week. So I was married, in 1917, September the 29th. I was married. And at that time, as I told you before, he applied for his papers for the concierge objector and got a letter that he should come to the army a few months later. He went away maybe 6 months later he went away. By that time, they were saying if those that had babies didn't have to go to the war. But it happened so I got pregnant. And he went away to the army anyways.
Lonnie, how did you feel about his being a conscientious objector? Did you agree with him, or did you have any thoughts about it at all?
Well, I'll tell you. He said if they would invade the United States, I would go and fight because this is my country. Here I earn my piece of bread. But we were not involved in the war at that time. To go to fight, to send our troops to Europe, he didn't want to go to be killed over there.
What did you think?
I thought he was right. And I say now, too, if anybody would invade our country, I would fight with my hands and with all my soul, I would fight. But not to send our boys to Vietnam.
Had you thought about it before your husband became involved and took a stand on being a conscientious objector? Had you had any thoughts about the war and whether you agreed with U.S. policy? Or?
I didn't want him to go to the war in the beginning.
Is that because he was your husband or you didn't agree?
No, I didn't agree. I was not for that war anyways. I was not for that war.
Why weren't you for the war?
Because we were not invaded. We have to send our boys to Europe. Isn't it right?
When did you first hear about the conflict, and how did you hear about it?
Well, I knew that he was going to the army. I knew. I married him. I was a war bride. I knew that he was going to the army.
Did you learn about the First World War from your husband? Did he tell you what was
Well, I knew. I used to read papers. I knew what was going on. I knew what was going on. I was very interested in politics and everything.